In recent years, more and more parents and youth workers have become legitimately concerned about what happens to their high school graduates once they head off to college. Among the many challenges students face is the diminishing of Christian faith. It seems that what they once embraced is weakened and at times forgotten. How can we encourage and support faith development so that it stands firm during the university years? Stay with us as we chat with Mike Gaffney, Director of Young Life College, about faith on campus and a whole lot more on this episode of Youth Culture Matters.
From the Center for Parent Youth Understanding, this is Youth Culture Matters. If you're a parent, youth worker, educator, counselor, grandparent, or anyone else who cares about kids, we're glad you've joined us for this practical, informative, and hope-filled podcast. This is a place where together we talk and think Christianly about the rapidly changing world of today's children, teens, and young adults.
Hey everybody, Walt Mueller here at the Center for Parent Youth Understanding for the first podcast of 2017. Youth Culture Matters, number one for 2017, and Happy New Year to everybody. Happy New Year to you, Jason.
And Happy New Year to you, too.
Well, thanks. I'm pretty excited about your resolution.
New Year's remind resolution me what my was. Resolution was.
Yeah, was that you're going to stop watching QVC so doggone much this year?
It was. Well, it was just starting to get too expensive, so... You know, but I your resolution was to put out a country album, so I'm excited to listen to that.
All right, you win that one. You win that round. You're up 1-0.
I'll listen to it.
Excellent. We turn everything into a competition here now. I don't know what has happened to us, but that was the best I could come up with on the spur of the moment. QVC.
Oh, well,
yeah, I don't know.
You made it up. I wasn't making mine up. You told me earlier before we got on the podcast that you were going to put out a country album. You had been traveling through Nashville. You'd kind of got a sense for what good country music makes.
Yes.
And so you started taking guitar lessons as a Christmas
gift. No, I didn't do that. You know, I've started that so many times and just never gotten past two chords. I don't even put a time on it. I just put number
of chords. Wait, let me guess the two chords, G and C?
I don't even remember. Because about 4 years ago, I stepped backwards and thought, let's make this a little more doable. So I asked for a ukulele for Christmas. So I have 4 strings now instead of 6, and I'm still not making progress. It's horrid.
If you
There's just too many things I want to do. Oh, no.
You could always go with the canjo, which is one string and a can.
Okay. Do you actually – is this something that's homemade? Is this a homemade
– It is a actual product, and just for kicks and giggles, the best man at my wedding – he's doing a documentary on the canjo here soon.
Okay. A documentary on the canjo. You know, in the world of youth ministry, there was once an instrument called the yotar. Did you ever hear of that?
Yotar.
Google that and tell us about
yotar.
It. What was his name? Was it Johan Anderson? He was like a songer. He did the famous Young Life songbook, Jason? The little brown-covered spiral, do they still use that? Young Life still have a songbook? But the Young Life songbook...
I haven't seen it come out, but they could.
He actually put that together, but he had this thing that he was selling. He was selling it at youth ministry conventions called the Yotar. I think it had 6 strings, maybe it had 4, but the way it was tuned, you didn't have to manipulate your left hand to create chords the way that you normally do, which is actually a pretty ingenious idea.
Yeah. That's a great. That would be a great tool for several friends.
Did you find it, the yotar?
Maybe.
Huh?
Maybe.
They're Googling it, but
I found the tar.
Oh, the tar. That's not it. No, that's something you put on the road.
It says tar is a stringed instrument.
No, that's not it.
Okay.
I'll find it here while you guys are cranking up to give us a quiz or a question. What do you got for us this time around?
Let's start the year right. We like this competition thing, so we're going to keep it going.
Oh, boy.
One of New Year, we looked up Nielsen. This is the 2015 list, Nielsen's top 10 New Year's resolutions that were reported in a Nielsen study. So Let's see. I think we started with you last time, Walt. So I'm just going to give you the opportunity. I have the top 10 list in front of me. I'll be fairly liberal. You don't have to get it exactly. Jason, you're going to name one that you think is correct. If you get it, I'll cross it off the list, and we'll move on to Walt, and he'll get a chance to say.
And
one.
just so I'm clear, we're looking at resolutions from 2015, the top 10.
You know what? I got to confess something here. I was just looking up the Yotar. I didn't listen to your instructions.
Oh, goodness.
distracted podcasting.
Well, no, first, did you find the Yotar?
This is more proof that you cannot multitask. No, you know what? It is Johan Andersen, and on his site, he has he's still doing this. He has the Yolder, which is a holder that he created to hold your music on the guitar, and now he has the Yukitar. He calls it the Yukitar. Yeah, so I'm not seeing the Yotar anymore, so it's called the Yukitar. I may have to get one of those.
I have a Gitalele at home, which is a guitar, but the size of a ukulele.
Okay.
It's
like a children's guitar.
I don't know enough about the instrument, but it's like half guitar, half ukulele.
Yeah. Yeah. Folks can look this stuff up. It's songsandcreations.com. Songsandcreations.com. And he has those songbooks there, the tune book and all of that. So, yeah, it's, man.
Wow. Yeah. Too bad we didn't do this podcast before Christmas, because that could have been a great Christmas.
Well, I wouldn't have time. I don't have time, because you know what I'm doing now? I'm trying to dig
out. You're writing your country album.
No, I'm trying to dig out from under the fruitcake. So darn much, yeah.
Yeah, well.
All right, let's reboot.
All right, you need the instructions again.
Yes. I'm focused.
All right.
I'm locked.
I have
on your eyes.
The 2015 list from Nielsen, as reported by Nielsen, of people's the top 10 reported New Year's resolutions. We're going to start with Jason. He's going to name one. So, he gets to go first.
Yeah.
If it's correct, he gets a point.
It's kind of like Family Feud.
We'll go back.
Okay.
And, yeah, sure.
Yeah. Survey says.
Yep.
Okay.
All right, Jason, what do you think?
Oh, at the top of the list has got to be lose weight.
Very good. That came in at number two.
Ooh, number two. Wow. Okay.
Walt, to you.
Stop smoking. That's not on there?
Nope. No, it's not.
Oh, my word.
Wow, Jason is up 1-0. That's a quick lead.
All right, Jason, back to you.
Top 10... resolutions. The next one would be get off of social media. Use social media less. Use the internet less.
No, we're going to say no to that.
Oh.
I'm going to be liberal with the answers, but that is not on there.
Okay. You know, Chris would have to be the worst guy to be hired for like a television game show judge, because you would get through one question, then you go to question two, and the remaining, you know, because what, a television show, what, 22 minutes after commercials? So you get through 2 minutes of the show, the remaining 20 minutes would just be arguments with somebody off screen, which would be Chris. And then you'd hear his voice escalate. Let's see if we can make that happen here. Okay, is it my turn?
Yes, it's your turn.
All right,
yes.
Okay. Since you said I was thinking use my phone less. Spend less time on my phone, my cell phone.
Not on here, no.
Okay.
What in the world?
I'm going to say spend more time with family.
Yes, correct.
Oh, 2-0.
That was number five.
Hmm.
All right, Walt,
so
back to
the
you.
We still don't have the number one.
That is correct. Okay. I'll give you this. It would relate to not smoking, but way more generic.
Okay, stop with nicotine or other addictions.
No.
Did you see what I did there?
Oh, wow.
That was pretty wide net I cast.
That was a little more generic. Not a lot more generic.
Okay,
that's
so
that's your third strike if we're going Family Feud style. Well, this game fell flat on its face. Jason, you want to go ahead and give another one?
Well, let me. Is another one maybe like take a vacation?
Okay, travel more. Yeah, we'll give you
travel more. Yeah.
Sure. All right. So far we've basically got 3-0. I think I think we're gonna end there. I'll read them off just so we can. Well,
come on, let's try.
Oh,
give us a
two
couple
in a row.
More chances.
I've won two in a row.
Did we get number one yet?
No.
No.
Oh, my word.
So is number one I mean,
it's very it's very similar
weight,
to the.
But is it like eat less or stop eating?
Sure. It's,
I mean,
eat healthy.
Is stay fit and healthy.
Okay. Oh, exercise more. Yeah.
Well, so, but stay fit and healthy isn't the same as lose weight. So
join the gym.
I was kind of trying to encompass all of that. So really, I got 1 and 2. So really, it's 4-0, Walt.
All right. So number one, which was stay fit and healthy. Number two was lose weight.
How about put the seat down?
We can put that into the category of get organized. How's that?
Okay.
Which was number six.
That's really? You would include that in that? Of all people?
This game is going to be take
judge
forever
okay,
if
all right,
I don't.
Go ahead. Give us some more.
All right. Obviously, a big category has to do with finances.
Save money.
Spend less,
spend
save
less
more.
Yeah, okay. Wow.
All right.
Give us some hints here so we can...
Number three is very...
Give Walt hints. I'm actually... I could have gone a little bit
further
with this.
You're just awesome.
I'm up for nothing, Walt. Yeah. So in this game, I am awesome.
Do you know what my resolution is? It's got to be on there. Jason's so awesome. Worship Jason less. Is that on there?
It is not.
Okay, all right.
All right, number three. On there. Think along the generic lines of carpe diem.
Try to live till
seize
the end
the day.
Of the year. Live my
opportunity,
one
seize opportunity.
Have my YOLO last through the year.
Enjoy life to the fullest.
How do you quantify?
How do you measure that?
How do you measure
that's
that?
Why that's your resolution.
This is kind of
all right. Oh, here's one. This would be the kind of answer that a cynical person like myself would give.
Stop making resolutions.
Not make any resolutions.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go. All right, two more. Walt, one of these, you should. It's right at the heart of the kind of resolution that perhaps you would make or want, especially youth workers and others to make.
Hmm.
Read more.
Yes.
Oh, that's a good one. I thought it might be send more donations to CPYU.
Read more.
Yes, I like that one.
Yep.
Let's stop there. Let's pause for a minute. Let's go around the room, and let's just see, is everybody going to do that? Because Tim Challies, he put up a great, and we'll link to it, he put up a great reading challenge. So it's early enough still to get in on that. He has a reading challenge that's everywhere from 12 books a year, once a month, up to 2 books a week. And then he categorizes all the different kinds of books you should be reading. I think that stuff is rich. Yeah. Anybody have anything to say about that around the table?
I'm going to start reading, and I'm going to start with comic books.
He says Kenton. Start reading.
Yeah. Wow. I know your mother's listening to this, and that is just absolutely devastating to her. So... Where does your mother work, by the way?
She works at a library.
That's what I thought.
And did you know they rent movies?
Well, I did know that.
If you'd ever stepped into a library, Ken, you would have realized that long ago.
Yeah. They have movies, CDs, video games these days.
My resolution is actually, it's like that one, but it's to get Kenton reading more. So we're working on that, yeah. What's the last one?
The only one we were missing was learn something new or a new hobby.
Oh, that's a good one. Okay, so let me ask this question. Just follow up real quick.
I'm going to learn the Yotar.
Okay, there's one. Kent, what would you do?
I'm going to learn the Kanjo.
The Kanjo. Jason, what would you do if you had to learn
what
a new
would
hobby?
I do?
Yeah.
If I were to learn a new hobby?
Yeah, this year.
Actually, I'd love – well, this isn't a hobby, but I would love to learn Spanish this year.
Ooh.
Me
gusta.
Muy bueno. Hey, did I actually just say something? I took Spanish in college. I think that's what it. I think it means very good.
Yes.
Bueno. By the way, you know we're if you can do we are releasing Spanish translated resources here. We have some online and others are being checked right now. So
that's correct.
We've got some friends in ministry who are checking those things out, working with in Latino countries and elsewhere. I think I would take a photography course. I've always wanted to do that. Although the reality is I don't know that I need it anymore because my smartphone takes the best pictures I've ever taken in my life.
That's actually and I don't so have not to true.
Do, no, it is. What? Have you seen my pictures?
Oh, I haven't seen pictures from your house. But people think smartphones take great photos, but they really don't.
So here we go. Now we're going to see Chris move into his cynical mode as
I could
the
push him
game
into that,
show
but
just.
I won't.
Yeah. He would. We would. This would be a good debate. We'll save that one for later.
It's
a,
they
would be
think
good.
They're the best because they, you know, can exist in the person's
because
pocket.
They look better. They think they're the best
because
they
or,
look
or,
better.
Or that or because
or
it's
you
a
can
digital
edit it.
They can take for, they can take 14 shots in yeah. 3 seconds and pick yeah. the one that they
or
like.
You do
better.
Have 13-14 megapixel cell phone cameras these days.
Yeah.
Competing with unless you're spending a couple $100, you better be getting. Yeah.
Would
large
you buy,
DSL
Chris, or? Would you buy into the argument if someone said, well, they do take better pictures for me because they look better? They look better.
But
shouldn't that be the best argument
for a
photo?
Better than what is what I'm saying. Better than your smartphone from 6 years ago? Yeah, sure.
Okay.
I would say there's no point in buying a point-and-shoot camera anymore.
Jason is just sitting there shaking
his head. Oh,
that
I would totally disagree with that, and I'm sure many photographers would also agree. I mean, there's no need for you to do that if you are just getting if you're just getting some, like, if you're just going to do photos as you're traveling around, it's not that big of a deal. But when it comes to, like, family photos, I still use a point and shoot. They turn out better. You can change the lenses on it. I mean, obviously, with smartphones now, you can get different things that go over the phones that allow for different types of setup, just like you would on a camera. But
what
I still think the best pictures...
Lenses?
What?
Lots
what?
Point and shoot versus DSLR. Point and shoot are the cameras that just have the single.
Well, sorry,
lens.
I'm thinking point and shoot. I apologize. I was thinking of DSLR.
Yeah.
So I would make the argument that a DSLR still wins.
Yeah. I would make the argument that we probably
sorry,
need
I thought
to
we
move
were
on to
that.
The
we are probably off topic.
To trends and stories.
I agree.
And I'm the
I
one
agree.
At fault for that.
Can
I'll
I,
take full
can
blame
I
for
play
that.
The Yotar on your country music album?
Yes, Ooh. You can. Yes, you can. Well, I'm yeah.
Can I speak?
You know, that would
can
be
I
fun.
Sing
I'm going to come up
Spanish
with some country
on your
song
country?
Titles, and that will be what we're.
Can we do a Christmas country album? Through.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
All right, let's move on.
Feliz Navidad. Like I, you know, I, anyways.
Yeah, this is. Okay. You know, my New Year's resolution was to talk about things in intelligent ways, and I think we've just broken that. So it always happens. The first.
Well, maybe we should go ahead and get started.
Yeah,
on
let's
articles,
do that.
Trends.
Let's talk, Jason. What
yeah,
do you got?
Issues. Well, there's no proper segue, but I'll just go ahead and start right with the trend that's happening in Florida, and I think it's someone that's going to be following across much of the U.S., and that's that we're finding STD cases on the rise, both in Florida, but I would also argue in a lot of other metropolitan areas throughout the country. Specifically in Florida, what the CDC has actually found is that the STD rate of chlamydia, gonorrhea, and syphilis are all on the rise by quite large percentages. So with regards to chlamydia nationwide, it's increased by more than 5,000 between 2014 and 2015. Gonorrhea was increased by 3,000, and cases of syphilis increased by 1,000. Now, although those numbers might seem small when you take and put into perspective the entire U.S. population, they are... increasing and in some areas even becoming epidemic. And so we just have to be aware of these trends because they do have an influence on the students, the sons, the daughters that we have. Out of the, I think, 20 million new STD cases that happen nationally each year, half of them affect 15 to 24-year-olds. So 10 million new cases of STDs are affecting 15 to 24-year-olds. And this just reminds us, we just need to be diligent in the way that we speak about sex, sexuality, and relationship. I think that we need to be honest in our conversation. We need to be both vulnerable, but also pointing to where the gift of sex and sexuality has been given, and allow for us to have better conversations around biblical sexuality, Christ-centered sexuality, that allows for us to dive into the beauty, the glory that we find when talking about sex. And if you've not already listened to it, I would highly recommend going back and listening to our podcast with Dale Keen, because he speaks about this idea of sex and it being something that can glorify God, and how do we do that? And so I would just recommend going back and checking that out.
Well, I want to talk about parental example. And this boils down to something we talk about a lot at our CPYU seminars. In fact, one of the statistics that I've been quoting for the last year, I think it came out October of 2015, so a little more over a year, came from Common Sense Media, actually it was December of 2015, I think, from Common Sense Media, the research that was being done on screen time, kids and screen time. So you know that they said teenagers ages 13 to 18 were spending 9 hours a day engaged with screens. Tweens ages 8 to 12 were spending roughly 6 hours a day engaged with screens. And so I will communicate that. And it's really interesting to watch the faces of parents, because They have a hard time believing it. They're just like, they're dumbfounded. And you get these looks like, are you kidding me? This is, you know, and that's what I think, I hope, will push them to teach their kids how to think Christianly and critically about all the media that they engage with, and use their screens and regulate their screen time in a way that brings honor and glory to God. Well, when you talk about parental example, new research that has just come out from Common Sense Media is saying this: that parents of teens and tweens are spending as much time engaged with their screens on a daily basis as are teenagers, 13 to 18, which is 9 hours a day. And so I think I'll just leave it at that and say we need to rethink the kind of model that we're giving to our kids, because they learn from us and what we do. In fact, 78% of parents said that they felt that they were providing a good role model for their kids when it came to media and technology. And then I guess when they hear the numbers, they have to rethink that and go, well, maybe not so good. So again, parents, rethink how much time you're spending and what kind of model are you giving to your kids, because every minute that you spend engaged with a screen is less time spent engaging in, and this is not to be cliche-ish, you know, growing your faith in God, or actually engaging in building real flesh and blood relationships with actual human beings, not doing so virtually.
Well, another trend that's beginning to happen, one you might be familiar with, is the mannequin challenge. I don't know if, Walt, you and the CPYU office have done the mannequin challenge. Has that happened yet?
No, we have not done that, but I've seen some ones. I'll just tell you,
yeah,
ones I saw, Jason, if people want to go find this, I think it's on YouTube, was I was speaking in December at the Christian Camping and Conference Association, and in their big room, several thousand attendees, they did a mannequin challenge.
Wow.
And I saw it. It was real. I didn't see them actually do this thing, but I saw it posted online. It's good, and I know there's some other ones out there. So I just go.
All right, well,
how are they holding?
We'll check it
go
out.
Ahead. Yeah.
Well, among challenges, among trends, the new one, much different than the mannequin, is the backpack challenge. And so, if you've not seen this, you might have seen it play out at youth group. You might have seen it play out at school, but it's where students line up with their backpacks. Now, remember, many backpacks today carry a number of books. These are not small books.
Them.
These are large books, textbooks. And students line up, and then someone runs a gauntlet full of these students lined up, and they throw backpacks at the individual as they are rushing through this line. And their goal is to get through the entire line. And it can be funny, but it can also be dangerous. We have to be aware of what's being carried in many of these backpacks. There have been other studies that have shown that students are carrying way too much in their backpack, and it's actually had an influence, an impact on posture, which then tells you how heavy backpacks are. So again, we want to make sure that you're aware of some of these challenges. Although they can be funny, they can also cause great harm, and we just have to be aware of them. It doesn't necessarily mean that we need to be a joy kill, but it does also mean, though, that we need to find ways that that allow for us to glorify God through the things that we participate in.
Did you just say joy kill?
It can be if you say, hey, don't do that.
Okay.
I remember being an adolescent. I remember being told not to do certain things.
I get the concept. I'm asking you about the word, because we always joke about words we use. Isn't it kill joy? But I guess if you're a killjoy,
it could be a joy kill.
You could be a joy kill, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I get it.
Or you could be a killjoy. I've said it both ways before. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I appreciate you correcting.
I'm not correcting, I'm just asking. I just be sure. you gotta laugh from the guys here when you said that. So I thought maybe I was not hearing
it. It's an East Coast, West Coast thing.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, here we call it the East Coast. Out there you call it Coast West. So that's probably the way.
That's right.
Thank you. Just reverse that. Yeah. Hey, Jason, I want to tell you, because, you know, with our Sexual Integrity Initiative, we talk about these things all the time. And the CDC is now coming out with some research where they've said that, according to some of what they're seeing in terms of teenagers and self-reported sexual activity, they have found that those who report to be teen virgins, who have not engaged in, you know, sexual intercourse and who have remained virgins, they're actually healthier when it comes to numerous other measures. Now, these other measures would be, you know, things like health behaviors, safety and health behaviors. So things like wearing a helmet when you're on a bicycle, wearing a seatbelt when you're in the car, talking about things like substance abuse, healthy diet, making sure you go to doctor's visits. Do you exercise? Do you not exercise? The use of tanning beds or not using tanning beds. They're finding that virginal students rate significantly and consistently better in nearly all health-related behaviors and measures than their sexually active peers. So, and then they've also found, conversely, that teens who have sexual contact with the same or both sexes have remarkably lower percentages of healthy behaviors overall than their heterosexually active peers. So, again, all that, and that's some of the sub research that's being done, that it seems to be that the regard for safety and health and borders and boundaries related to sexuality translate into other areas and a higher regard for self. And even, I think, the value of persons, we might be able to infer that from the research that's being done there. I think, to go a step further, those of us who are teaching our kids, whether they're our own kids as parents or whether they're youth group students who are, you know, in our youth groups as we work as youth workers, I think that when we give to them an integrated sense of borders and boundaries related to personal safety and even physical health, and then a godly view of sexuality, that translates over into other areas of life. So that's a good thing.
It is. And I do want to come back to something, because when I first read this article a little while back and I was looking at the study, it talked about they're less likely to use tanning beds. And so there are going to be some listeners that are going to say, tanning beds. And so I was looking this up, and I was actually speaking to someone that's in our office that used to work at a tanning bed place. And what they said is that it's actually a place where you can easily pass along certain diseases. And so really overall what it's saying is that you just live a healthier lifestyle. And so I just want to come back to that. I also like to point this out for the individuals that we know, and this has been shown in earlier studies, but students that choose to wait actually tend to be more civically minded as well, more involved within their community. And I think a lot of that has to do with they're worrying less about some of the decisions that they're making sexually and able to engage in the world around them a little bit better.
That's good. Good
I just
point.
Want to quickly note a podcast that I came across. It's also a show on NPR. It's called This American Life. We've highlighted it here before. But there is a recent episode that talked about when duty calls, when we're called into duty, and it doesn't necessarily mean that we want to, but we're asked to. And the thing that really stood out to me was a second story in the podcast, and it dealt with an individual, a son, that was called back to be with his mom and his brother, both of whom he had not seen much of throughout most of his adolescence and early adult years. And one had been an alcoholic, the other had been in and out of prison, his brother. And it just reminded me of this. I think that the work that we are called to as parents and as youth workers is to understand the stories around us. And what I found so fascinating about this is that it was when the older brother, the individual that traveled back to be with his mom and his brother, began to understand the story, he began to understand why they were engaging in some of the destructive behavior. And that once he was involved in their life, things began to change because he became a place of stability. He became a place of reason. And I just think that sometimes we have those students that we don't quite understand. We have individuals in our lives we don't quite understand. And I think that sometimes when we're able to understand a little bit more about their story, it allows for us to have a little bit more of an influence. One of the things I just love, and I'm hoping Gaffney will actually talk about this, but Young Life often talks about this idea of you have to earn the right to be heard. And that begins by listening to stories. That hit me really hard with this, because it was once he started listening to the story that he was able to understand it, and he was then able to speak into their lives in a totally different way than when he had first arrived. And that just really struck me. And it strikes me also just as someone that is continuing to work with youth and wanting to understand the stories that we're engaging.
You know what? We have heard from day one with CPYU, you know, whenever I talk to kids, their biggest complaint about adults, parents and other adults, teachers, you know, it can be anybody who's an adult, is number one, they don't listen. Number two, they don't understand. And yeah. You're right, Jason. When we don't do that, we forfeit our opportunity to be heard. Well, Jason, I know that we talk a lot about our sexual integrity initiative here at CPYU. You and I are working on that, and dating, you know, talking about dating. Now, I have to confess something, because of my age, generational thing, we joke about this all the time. Whenever I'm in a conversation and I go to ask someone about their relationships, the question that pops into my mind that I want to verbalize is, you know, are you dating anybody now? Or are you dating? And I always hesitate now when I say it, because I think maybe I'm using the wrong language, that it's language that's no longer used, or that dating has just changed. Now, I'm just confessing this, you know, kind of getting stuck. I trip over this when I'm in these conversations. I'm probably on to something, right? I mean, guys who are younger are telling me this, and some recent survey data that's come out of Australia. It was actually as a result of a study conducted by eHarmony in Australia. It reinforces the idea that dating, in fact, has changed. So we no longer, I'll just state it this way, we no longer date one person. Instead, we quote-unquote see people. And the issue now is that you're not dating or seeing one person at a time. They actually found, the study found, that it's now normal to date six people at once. And to me, this has just changed the whole landscape. To be honest with you, I have to think more about this, and, you know, how do we respond to it? How do we speak into this? What is the negative fallout that comes from this? I know that much dating now takes place after a couple spends time in bed together, after they engage in sexual activity. That's what we hear from the college campus. I know that to be a fact as well. But people are unwilling to commit. They're unwilling to stay with one person. They jump from person to person. I think a lot of the dating apps where you're just swiping, you know, from one face, one body to another, it contributes to this. But it's frightening to me that this is what's happened. And so I think we need to be aware of this and say, okay, how do we speak the truths of the gospel as they relate to love, sex, marriage, how we form those relationships? How do we speak the truths of the gospel to that? And I think part of it goes to, it begins with listening and understanding kind of what the playing field looks like, so to speak, for younger generations as they engage in dating.
And there is a book that was actually released early in the year. It was by the comedian Aziz Ansari, but he partnered with a sociologist to look at the trends among dating. It's called Modern Romance. And this trend reminded me of that book, because it looked at a lot of the trends that we find in dating today, or hanging out. And if you just want to go further with this, I would just recommend, at times it can be a little bit crass, but the science, the sociology in it was well done. And I think it points it paints a picture, not just in our country, but around the world, what's happening with dating. Well,
what was that,
I'm really
what was
excited.
That called again? Modern
it's
Romance?
Called Modern Romance okay. by Aziz Ansari, who is a comedian. He was on Parks and Rec. But he partnered with a sociologist, a prominent sociologist. I think he was from Stanford. Mm. But they had conducted studies, and he did some of his studying through even some of his stand-up, which was really phenomenal. Some individuals would get up on stage, and he would read texts to and from individuals they were interested in. And that in and of itself was both hilarious but also really telling of the culture that we live. So I we're always recommending books. I would highly recommend taking a look at that. Well, I want to just say that I'm incredibly excited for our host or our guest today, who's come along with us to share a little bit about what's happening among adolescents, specifically college students, young adults. His name is Michael Gaffney. He's with Young Life. He's the national director for college. And I have known Mike for quite some time. My wife has been good friends with him. And so I'm really excited to bring him onto the podcast to have some conversation around what's happening at the college level in the lives of young adults. And I think that what he'll add to some of this conversation is going to be really important. So stick around, and we're excited to welcome Michael Gaffney to the podcast here after this short break.
Here at CPYU, we want to help you help parents stay up to date on today's youth culture. One of our most popular resources is our monthly parent page. This four-page, full-color resource offers parents a timely, practical look into current youth culture trends, along with resources to help them parent their children and teens Christianly in today's rapidly changing youth culture. If you're a youth worker who would like to get this monthly resource into the hands of your parents, you can see a sample parent page and learn more by visiting cpyuparentpage.com.
Welcome back to Youth Culture Matters. I'm here with Walt Mueller and Mike Gaffney, who's the Vice President of Young Life College and University Ministry. And Mike is actually a longtime friend of my wife and is now a friend of our family. And it's such a pleasure to have you on, Mike. I want to just highlight who you are and what you're up to. I came across Mike when he was working at the University Presbyterian Church in Seattle, Washington, which has a wonderful college ministry called The Inn. My wife had the opportunity to work with this ministry. But that is not where you started. You're actually a graduate of the University of Washington, got your MA in theology at Fuller University or Fuller Seminary. And then you started some of your work in college ministry at First Presbyterian Church of Boulder, Colorado. And then from there, you and your wife went on to work at The Inn. You also started the Ascent Network, which exists to encourage, connect, and develop church-based college ministries around the world. And that started back in 1997. The list goes on and on. You ultimately made it to Young Life, serving as the vice president for college and university ministry. And Mike, I'm just really excited to have you on to be able to speak about college students and to share some of your wisdom with our listening audience.
Well, it's a privilege to get to do this, especially with you, Jason, and just the joy of being in this together over the years. It's a treat to be able to be here with you. And wow, when you read that long list, it really starts reminding me that I am getting old. So appreciate the reminder today. So
Well, the great thing about you, Mike, is you're not. Now, you do have three grown daughters that you and your wife raised and in fact, just celebrated the wedding of Olivia, who is your oldest. So that's quite exciting.
Yeah, we're excited. Well, not quite yet had the wedding, but the wedding's coming up in just a few weeks here, and we're excited for it. And yeah, so we're kind of moving into that stage. Our youngest daughter is in her last year of the university, and so we're seeing the light at the end of the tuition tunnel. But my whole world... My whole world is the university college world. Whether it was my kids or my job, it feels like everything I do is university. So, it's a part of who I am. And of course, I'm a rabid University of Washington Husky fan. So we enjoy our university life.
Well, and not only were you a graduate, but you were just recently inducted into the Hall of Fame, or at least your team was, from the 84, from 1984, because you played for the Huskies.
I did. And many parts of my body remind me on a daily basis that I played college football. But we had a lot of fun, so we enjoyed that. It was a great time. So.
I just love that you are so intertwined with college ministry and college life, and it's really a part of not only your DNA but your family's DNA, and that's one of the reasons we brought you on, because I wanted you to really dive into some of the things that you see happening among the lives of students on the college campus. And so I want to start with a fairly broad question, but I'm hoping it will lead to some more specifics, and that's just, you've been doing this for quite some time. Even you mentioned that you're getting a little bit older, but with age comes wisdom. And so I would love to hear maybe some of the changes that you've seen in the lives of college students over the last 20 years. What was it like when you first stepped into it? What is it like now?
Yeah. Well, actually, that's a great question. And this year actually will be my 30th year of working in collegiate ministry work. And before that, I was a student. So really the last, 35 years, I had to have that extra year, and the university has been connecting the university. So 3 decades, and I also just happened to celebrate my 30th wedding anniversary with my wife as well. And so we've been thinking a lot about the last 3 decades and what we learned and overlap of things as well. But, one of the things that I know has, obviously radically changed since the time we started till right now is this little thing we call a cell phone that just happens to connect up to this other little thing called the internet. And so needless to say, there's a lot that has changed for young people from when we started back in 1987 to where we are today. And in some ways, I don't try to define it as good or bad. It's just the reality. There's a connectedness that occurs today that didn't occur back then, especially, for example, like around parents. It's not unusual to ask a student, how many times do you talk to your mom on a given, like we would ask, how many times did you talk to your mom this year? He's like, well, I was home at Thanksgiving, I was home at Christmas, and I called her once, And it's like, well, students today would say, well, I talked to my mom 3 times today, There's a big difference in that connectivity that occurs. And I would even say in my case, having 3 daughters, it's been helpful because I so to speak, can get more dialogue through texting my daughters sometimes than I even would just when I'm with them face to face at times. So it keeps me connected. It can keep people connected. There's obviously downsides to some of that as well. But I think that's been one of the big, obviously big impacts for us in regards to not simply having a cell phone, or having the internet, but this connectivity that we now have. Another good example of something that's really different, I think, from 30 years ago is we have a lot, young people today have a lot more, so to speak, connectivity to the world. There's even more experiences that are being had. You just think about the difference, the generation that's coming into college now, how much they've traveled. Travel is so much easier. Families travel. I know families my age, a lot of my, so to speak, colleagues and peers said, one thing we're going to do with our kids is we're going to travel, because when we were kids, maybe we didn't get to travel. And so you have a lot of young people today who've traveled, experienced a lot more in the world. And taking that further, just the simple ability to get on the internet and find any answer to any question you might have, or at least pseudo answers to the questions that you're asking. You can experience things, right? Through the internet, you can experience parts of the world. That's radically changed the student that we meet as an 18-year-old on campus today. All that experience, it feels different. It looks different. They talk different. But here's the caveat that I tie to it, and that is that I'm not necessarily sure that they've had the same level of responsibility that a student had 30 years ago coming to the university. Maybe they didn't have to own as much of their existence, if you will. Hence the reason why we have this idea of extended adolescence or the emerging adult. of late adolescence, this idea that they're having the experience, a T.S. Eliot quote, right? They're having the experience, but they're missing its meaning. And I think there's a lot of experience being had by young people today, a lot more information at their fingertips, a lot more experience, but I'm not so sure if they're having the same level of responsibility that maybe 30 years ago you walked in and, you know, young people could talk about the things, so to speak, they had to own. I bought my own car. I paid for my own car insurance when I was 16. Well, you don't hear that as much today. So,
yeah, Mike, let me ask you on that. All those changes, those are so significant, and I'm sure there's much more, you know, if we could pick your brain a little more on that. But just with what you mentioned, how has this combined to present challenges to people like you who are doing ministry with university students? And then my follow-up question would be, you know, before a student gets there, because of these challenges that start at much younger ages, obviously, you know, what can youth workers do to prepare them for the university experience? But first, you know, what kinds of unique challenges has this presented to you in ministry as that's morphed as well in response?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think one of the natural byproducts of it is that, is first in the connectivity piece, is that I just think there's so many more options for students. You know, I was called kind of the food court, the local mall food court experience. You walk in and there's so many different options of what to eat, you know, and even when I remember going in there with my own kids and realizing my one kid wanted to have the fish and chips and my other kid wanted to have a hamburger and somebody else wanted Chinese food and somebody wanted something from one place, you know, to eat, but something to drink from a different place. And you found yourself scattered, you know, you found yourself as a parent kind of going, okay, if we do it this way, it's really, you know, you end up never sitting down at the table and, so to speak, eating together because your food's coming from different places. And I think that's life and the life experience of a lot of young people today. There's so many different places that they're connecting that in some ways maybe there's no real deep connection happening at any one place. And so I think that makes it challenging. I think within Christendom, when you have one of the questions, when we started Young Life College 10 years ago, people would say to me, do we need another college ministry on these campuses? And to be honest with you, I mean, I've got an answer of that's filled with a yes on that. But the honest part of that too is to say, well, yeah, there's a lot of Christian opportunities, and kids that come onto the campus will often find themselves connecting a lot of different places, good or bad. But the reality is sometimes you don't get the same depth of involvement because of all this other connectivity and opportunity and options that young people have. I think it affects us that way. I think the other thing that we are affected by, now, I really believe in this generation. Like, I mean, my kids are this generation, so I've seen them. I've had university age, high school, university age folks in my house for the last decade. You know, our house was a drop-in house. So it wasn't just, you know, this wasn't quote-unquote ministry. This was just my family. This is my family, my kids, my wife's hospitable. She likes to invite people. This is just kids being in our home. And being around them on a regular basis, I really like this generation. I really believe in what they can do. I think they're some of the brightest students that I've ever met in the 30 years I've been doing this. They're bright, they're capable, they're talented. You see a lot, and I think I see this across kind of ethnic groups and races as well. You see just a lot more intelligence. But with that, the challenge sometimes is to give them a responsibility and ask them to take ownership and watch it and having to peel all the way back to what it maybe felt like to take and give a 14 or 15 or 16-year-old a responsibility. You know, that difference between saying, here, take this and run versus, oh, wait a minute, let me walk with you for a little longer before you're ever going to be able to run with this thing. It's just taking longer. Hmm.
Is there more of an openness to the gospel? You know, as you communicate good news to them, do you find that students today are more open, or are there more hurdles for you to jump to break through to that openness?
Well, I probably would have to answer that question in part by saying it depends on part of the country we're talking about. And With my work right now with Young Life, I mean, I'm in every part of the country, engaging students and engaging staff, and even in other countries. So I would say it depends. I mean, I think you still have a very different dynamic in the, so to speak, Bible Belt. There's a whole different set of challenges than you do where I live in the Pacific Northwest. You know, still being a relatively very unchurched part of the country, I think you face different things. But generally speaking, I think students are open to the dialogue. I don't think there's a resistance. If anything, there might be apathy. I don't necessarily experience a sense of resistance. I think they're open to people who are willing to ask good questions, people that are willing to admit their own brokenness, be authentic, you know, share your own doubts and questions. And I think it allows students to enter into a dialogue. So.
Good.
What you said earlier when you were talking about some of the characteristics of this generation, that they have experiences without meaning. And what I'm curious about is how can some of the ministries, or how have some of the ministries that you've worked with created experiences with meaning?
Or great question. Yeah. It's challenging. I mean, it really is. You know, I always say that I feel like the most important thing that we can do, because I'm a big believer in creating experiences. I mean, you know, my own kids would probably say that's the one thing they like about mom and dad, is mom and dad created experiences. You know, we created places for stuff to happen and for us to connect and to build memories and all those kind of things. I think the challenge that we have with young people is following up and processing the experiences that they've had. That I think is the challenge. So I guess the flip side of that is, I'd say the positive of what we've seen over the years is when groups of students have experiences together, and by nature will be back in relationship following those experiences where they can have dialogue and talk about them. I mean, so let's take the big service. Let's say we have a service day of, you know, going into the inner city of Seattle for a day and helping to build houses or something like that, Habitat House. Do you do that experience? And then do you have dialogue about it when it's over? Or did you just go and have the experience and say, oh, we just did something great. We helped build a house. Well, let's go deeper into that and talk more about what that meant and what the experience like. And what, you know, when you first arrived, were you excited or were you scared to death? I mean, do we go to that level to talk about the experiences, or are we just having them?
Wow. I'm curious what you would say to the individual that's listening, because there are a lot of churches. I see that there are a lot of churches that are starting to form college ministries that historically have never done so. And some of it is they have a growth in those that are staying at home, going to community college, those that are staying closer to home. There's any number of reasons that I've seen why some of these churches who have historically not had college ministries start college ministries. So I guess the question I would have is, what would you say to the individual that's starting one in their church, how to go about doing that? But then also, and maybe this is one for after we come back from the break, but I also see a lot of college ministries getting tied up with young adult ministry. Like they become one and the same rather than separate, and I'm curious your thoughts on that.
Well, I think that's great if you're seeing churches that are starting to step into that. I mean, when you talk about what has changed over the decades, I mean, one of those things that has definitely changed is the whole idea of online, you know, people taking online classes, doing their degrees online. Commuter schools have become very popular, whether it's community college or four-year commuter school. So a lot of people are staying home. Matter of fact, I think one of the reasons Young Life, it was good for Young Life to get into the college game. When people ask me, well, why Young Life? I said, well, Young Life is rooted in most communities. They've already established a relationship with 15, 16, 17-year-old young people who now are staying at home and taking classes online or taking a class or two at the community college. Well, you're already in the community. You're already in their lives. So let's start ministries. A Campus Crusade and a university might find it troubling or challenging to get to those kids. But churches, local communities of faith, or an organization like Young Life is already in those communities. And so I think that's that's one of the things that's really beneficial to be able to get involved. So But I can go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. No, what were you going to say?
Well, I was going to say, I mean, the deeper dynamic into all of this is, and this is, you'll hear me say this over and over and over again. People get sometimes tired of me saying this, is that I believe it's the job of the college minister. And I could even say, I think it's the job of the youth minister as well, but it's the job of the college minister to help, not to do the ministry, but to help the people of the community minister to college students. So it's not about me being the college minister. It's about me helping the church minister to the next generation of people. That's my job. When I train our Young Life staff, when I talk with churches, and I talk about to these college ministry people, I say, your job is to get other adults in your community to pour in the lives of these students. We've got to connect young people to the body of Christ. And I don't mean sit in a pew on a Sunday morning. I mean connect them to the people who walk with Jesus, and their doctors and their lawyers and their school teachers and their stay-at-home parents. They're in these roles in life. They're making the world go around, but they love Jesus and walk with Jesus. Most of our students will never wear the Young Life staff shirt. They will never wear the pastoral collar. They will be working in jobs. And as believers, we need to connect them. And, well, I think that goes back to the question you were asking earlier as well about churches and what do we do with people when they're 15, 16, 17 years old. The question still to me is, are we connecting the generations together so our young people are growing up not in programs or in pews, but are growing up with people who love Jesus?
Gosh, so that's rich.
I had a guy say to me one time, he was introducing me to speak. I won't say what it was at because I want to be respectful of the person, because it's going to be a critical statement. But the person introduced me, and one of the things he said about the Inn in Seattle is he said they have 120 adults that are investing in the lives of students. And he started it by saying this is a luxury that they have of having 120 students. And you know what? The first thing out of my mouth was when I got up. Wasn't what I was going to speak on, but I got up and I said, my friend called that a luxury. I call it a necessity. And the reason we have 120 is because I deem it a necessity. We must do it. Yeah. And so to everybody else, it looks like a luxury. So
that's such a good word, Mike. I just have to share this before we go to break, because I've really appreciated it. I don't think that a lot of people are going to be aware, but you in many ways helped build the framework of what Young Life College is looking like at the moment. And I just have to say that as I've traveled and as I've had the opportunity to be a part of other college ministries, it's been really interesting as I watch other college ministers worry about Young Life coming into the college setting and thinking that it's going to take away their youth. They become territorial. But the experience that I've had and I've shared with them is every time a Young Life College comes into a college campus, it actually grows all the college ministries, because it does exactly what you're saying. Many of the individual students are familiar with Young Life. They participate, but then often what happens is they're getting plugged into other college ministries. They become aware of the life and the vibrancy. And there are other people that from, just like you're talking about the necessity of all this community, it actually broadens the community and allows for this deeper elevation of conversation. And I deeply appreciate that. I think that sometimes we get worried about the territory, and the reality is it's not our territory to begin with. It's God.
Sure.
So
sure.
Well, I think this is a great opportunity to just take a break, and we're going to come back because I want to continue a lot of this conversation, maybe talk about some of the practical aspects of this as well. So we're going to take a quick break here with Youth Culture Matters, and we'll be back in a moment with our guest, Mike Gaffney.
Here at the Center for Parent Youth Understanding, we want to help you stay up to date on today's youth culture. One of the tools we've developed to keep you current is our weekly Youth Culture E-Update. Delivered to you by email, our Youth Culture E-Update comes to you in a format that allows you to easily scroll through and quickly choose those stories and resources that will be most helpful to you in your particular setting. To sign up for this free resource, go to our website at cpyu.org, scroll down to the bottom of the page, and enter your email address in the tab marked E-Update Sign Up. It's that simple.
Welcome back from the break. You're listening to Youth Culture Matters. Again, we're here with Walt Mueller and Mike Gaffney, who is the Vice President for Young Life College and University Ministry. And Mike, you have the pleasure, since you're a guest on our podcast, to be a part of what we call Take Five. So we don't want to embarrass you, although it does happen from time to time with our guests, but it's just an opportunity for our listeners to get to know who you are outside of some of the conversation. So without further ado, I'm going to hand it over to
I just
my
partner
in crime, Walt.
We don't want to embarrass you. It does happen from time to time, and Jason does a good job of embarrassing himself quite a bit. So would you say that's accurate?
Well, I mean,
you can call it embarrassing,
make it fun for everyone else that's listening. Yeah. I mean, it just it depends on how you define it.
Yeah. So you're in good company because we embarrass ourselves quite a bit. So, all right, I've got these five questions, rapid fire, off the top of your head. A couple of them are a little more serious, a couple of them not. So here we go. I love this, you know, just getting to know people. What's the first job you ever had? Probably part-time, probably in high school. What's the first job you ever had? What did you do?
Gaffney Construction. My family's in construction, and I would hear the pound on my door, especially Saturday mornings. Get up, let's go. And I'd have to go scrape what they called scrape out houses.
Oh, man. When you said that, at first I thought, this guy's amazing. He started his own construction company when he was in high school. You should have stuck with it. That's good. Okay, so, yeah.
Well, you should know, I'm the youngest of nine kids.
Oh, man, that was brutal job. So, a brutal job then.
Yeah, so I spent my life being told, you know, where to go and what to do. And
yeah.
And according to them, and I was spoiled. So it was kind of lived both those worlds.
Good. All right, second question. You get to replay one moment in your life. What moment would you replay and why? Got to have a great moment. You'd want to go back and just experience it again.
You know, this is going to sound kind of funny, but I would love to go back and remember and re-experience the moment that I actually met my wife. Now, the reason why I tell you that, it'll make sense when I say I was in the seventh grade. We were at the skating rink, and she came walking over to me and introduced herself to me. In seventh grade, right, you're just, your hormones are all whacked out, you're all whacked out, you're all messed up and crazy. But I would love to go back to that moment and feel what I really felt when this absolutely adorable seventh grader with braces walked over and introduced herself to me.
That's awesome. Jason, do you remember when you first met Emily?
Oh, yeah. Mike probably knows the story. But, yes, I totally remember when I first met Emily.
Yeah, I remember that with Lisa, too. And you're right, Mike. That's a great – I would love to go back and experience that. I don't know if I'd want to be in my body or I'd rather watch it, you know,
watch
from
it.
Another – you just kind of watch it and see what – see how the whole thing went down.
I wish I could remember what the first thought in my mind was.
Yeah.
Now, as seventh grade, I'm pretty sure – I could probably guess what it was. we won't go there.
Yeah.
So let's just say my wife matured early as a young lady. So she was.
Right. It always goes. Do you remember your first thought, Jason? I'm not asking you to say it, but see, same thing for me. I mean, it was like I saw her. It was in church, and I said, "That is a good looking lady." And she was
mine is in more recent memory than the two of you. So I can still kind of replay a lot of what was going on.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Third question. What's the weirdest thing you've ever eaten?
I just got asked this question. This literally just the other day. Yeah, just 2 days ago. It was a scorpion in China. It was probably the strangest thing that I'd ever eaten. And I said no to a bunch of other things that would have been way more strange, but we decided to take a skewer. They had these scorpions on a skewer and they were alive, and we said let's we all have to eat one. And so there were three of us, so we each ate one.
And you ate them while they were alive?
No. Thankfully, they flash fry them.
Okay, right.
They put them down and they fry it really fast and they give it to you, so they're not alive.
Okay, taste. What did it taste like, just out of curiosity?
I want to say chicken, but no, it tasted like crunchy, salty you know, yeah. something.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
It wasn't, right. it was, there was really no taste outside of salty.
Okay. All right. Here's one of my favorite questions to ask because I like to read. Best book you've read in the last year. Any topic, any genre.
My best book in the last year. Good question. Probably, it's hard for me to narrow it down.
Well, you could just choose one from among.
I'll just say the one I just finished. I just got done reading Erwin McManus's book, The Artisan's Soul.
Okay.
And I really appreciated the book because he just thinks so differently than I think theologically and about just life. And it was so refreshing to really enjoy kind of a very artistic individual, very creative, artistic individual write and really enjoy what he was writing about, talking about.
So, yeah. Okay, good. Good. All right, last question. And I really don't know where this thing came from, but if you had your human head but the body of an animal, what body would you pick?
What?
That is really
all right, just tell me. You weren't asked that question in the last week, were you?
No.
Okay, all right. I feel better now. That's good. And once you answer on another podcast, we'll have fun with this here. We love these questions.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. Yeah.
Human head, animal body.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go with, I want to fly.
Oh, there
so
you
I'm
go.
Gonna, I'm gonna have the body of an eagle.
Okay.
Which would look pretty funny with a human head, but.
With a human head.
Well, when you think about it, Mike, any animal body would look funny with a human head. So
that's true.
Yeah, see, I mean, I'm not sure of any that would look great, but that's – Jason, I like that. See, I like putting guys on the spot like that where – did you think of something, Jason, for you? Did you think of something that
– Yeah, we'll save it for another podcast, though.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I just like the fact that now Mike has talons. So that's pretty sweet.
Yeah, could you see that thing like fly down and land on a power line outside your window? That would just be absolutely freaky.
Here's the question: does it still make the sound of an eagle, or does it speak like a human?
Ooh,
that's not one of the questions, Mike. You don't have to answer that. Don't let him pressure you. That's the kind of thing he's trying to back you in a corner and just make you look bad. So
that's yeah.
All right, was good. Thank you for that. We're going to have fun with that question in the future.
Oh, that's great. Oh, well, thank you, Mike. I don't think that we embarrassed you too bad, except maybe with that last one. But we'll move on. Again, wanted to pick up with where we had kind of left off. And even during the break, we were talking a little bit about parents and their role in preparing students for college. Walt, this was something that you had brought up, and maybe you can ask it in a much better way than I'm setting it up, but maybe give an idea of what you've seen parents do really well in preparing their students for college and what you've seen done not so well in preparing their students for college.
Yeah, because we've had parents ask that. You know, they want to be proactive in the right way. So what should they avoid and what can they do?
Yeah, that's good. I mean, there's so much, and there's a lot of good stuff out there that other people have talked about and written on. And having gone through it myself, you know, probably what I say today would be different than maybe what I would have said 10 years ago, having gone through it. But I think parents. What seems to have gone well, if we narrow it down to at least an ability for the young person to kind of continue to pursue their relationship with Jesus as they move into college, if that fair to kind of narrow it to that idea, the things that they've done well, I would say they never made it about a youth program with their kid. In other words, it was their kids' involvement or commitment to their faith wasn't measured by whether they were involved in a youth program. or necessarily even wanted to attend church on Sunday or to worship on Sunday or to go to that weekend retreat or whatever. They didn't make it about the program that they were involved in. They made it about their own dialogue at home, their own engagement around about faith within the home. So I've seen kids who've grown up where it was their parents made it all about them going to church or going to youth group or going to Young Life or whatever, versus the students who will say, my parents always made it about a dialogue that we had about faith, about what we believe, what values we hold as a family. In other words, parents weren't afraid to say, this is what we value and this is what we believe, you know, so to speak, this is what the Gaffneys believe, you know. That was okay, but the follow-up of, do you question this, or where do you not agree with this? The ability to just have an open dialogue as part of your home environment has been, I think that's where I've seen for the most part things go well. Not making it about the programs, but making it about the dialogue, the personal relationship at home, being able to talk about faith. I think that's been a big part of it. As I look back,
that's good.
Hundreds, even I would even go into the thousands of students that I've interacted with in dialogue. Even did a big survey on this at the end one year about some of these things that, what did your parents do that help it? But that was one of the biggest things that it came out, was that my parents were open to talk about it. And they talked about their own struggles and their own doubts, you know?
Oh, that's good. I'm curious then what you've seen parents do well during college, because there's then the prep for college, but then during college, which is where a lot of the ministry that you've done has taken place, you've gotten to see both good and bad. So, what does it look like to help nurture that faith when they're no longer in the home?
Yeah, well, some of this even goes back to talking about the high school stage and something else that I'd probably add in the what have they done well. I don't know exactly what the right age would be. I think our youth people would probably be better at talking about that than I would. But at some point in that journey through adolescence, how do you help your son or daughter to, you know, begin to make this faith their own faith? And in doing so, how does them making their faith their own, what part does a program or a church or an organization play in that process? So there's some of my own peers will have switched churches because their kid felt like this. There was a youth group or their friends were all going to this certain church. So the kid wanted to go there, and their parents are struggling. Like, do we switch churches because of that? You know, I'm not necessarily saying that's always right or it's wrong. I just think it's an interesting, you know, thought to work through of how do we help our kids as they take ownership of their faith, make a decision as to where they then will plug in. Okay, so going into college then becomes the question of how do we as adults or how we as parents help our own children think about the faith communities that would be healthiest for them, that would help them to thrive, that would be encouraging to them. How do we go about that? My wife and I had pretty clear ideas with all three of our girls what type of university they would probably thrive in the most. I'm not saying we were perfect, you know, about it, but we definitely had some pretty good ideas that this child would work better in smaller classrooms, but be in a big town. I mean, we had those kind of conversations. Christian school versus a not Christian school. We had a pretty good idea. Well, when my kids started talking about getting plugged into a type of organization on campus, now I have the benefit of knowing different types of organizations and churches, you know, but be able to talk that through with them about what kind of place would you fit best in, and not just assume because you grew up Presbyterian, you're going to go Presbyterian. Just because you grew up in a non-denominational, you're going to be non-denominational. Just because you grew up, you know, non-Catholic, you're not going to go Catholic. My own daughters, my youngest daughter goes to school at a Catholic school, and one of the most significant experiences of her 4 years there was doing the Catholic Search retreat. Greatly impacted her life. but she didn't grow up with any Catholic in her background, you know. So I think that I think it's helping your kids to think through what might be valuable for you as you plug in. And then while they're there, I think spend a lot of time praying. As parents, that's the biggest thing, because you got to let go, sure. Right? I mean, there's a degree of letting go. And again, I think the biggest things that we can do as parents is making sure that we, you know, go and have lunch and have dinner if we can, if our kids are close enough. You know, schedule lunch, schedule dinner, go hang out with them and continue the faith dialogue and really giving them the opportunity to share what they're really doubting and struggling and with during their college days.
I think the thing that I think about when you're speaking with each of your daughters and the experience that you had in helping, well, not telling them where to go, but giving them insight on places that they could choose, was that it sounds like you really became, just like you've done throughout the ministry that you've done with college students, you became a student of each of your daughters and what their likes and what their dislikes were, and really then also studied the places that they were trying to go to really kind of help navigate. I mean, is that a fair assessment? Is that a fair way of saying that, or maybe there's a better way?
No, I would agree with that. And I think that was something, you know, my wife and I were taught by nature of being in the ministry and roles we were in. We were educated and taught to make sure we treat our children uniquely, you know, that each one is different. So let's make sure that we pursue our dialogues with them around faith, around school, around athletics, around, you know, uniquely. Now, that doesn't mean, you know, Jason, you know, I'm a team guy. I mean, you know, I was a team sport guy all my life. And so, you know, the coach calls a play and we need to run the play. We might have to audible or we might have to ad lib when the pass protection breaks down. But the reality is there are some things that are just the way they are. You know, we're sitting down to dinner. We're not going to make an individual separate dinner for everybody. You know, like we made one dinner, we're all going to eat this one dinner. You know, so there are, you know, and there are things that we as a family say, look, this is a characteristic of us as a family. You know, we're going to highly value gratitude, for example. You know, we are going to be a grateful family. And so there's not going to be a lot of room for being ungrateful people, you know, like in this family. We want to be grateful people. But the flip side of that is, you know, one person in our family loves to do thank yous by writing notes. Another one of our, you know, family members thinks that the only way to really be a grateful person is to go up to somebody and tell them face to face. They'd never write a note, those kind of things. How do you keep it, you know, so that we recognize the uniqueness of each one of our kids as they go off to school while at the same time holding up some of the principles and values that are important to us?
That's good.
Yeah, Mike, I really like this intentionality that you're talking about and just taking the time to really get to know your kids and respond to them individually and think about their futures that way. Just a real quick question and maybe you alluded to this, but just for clarification, in hindsight, have your girls, you said you have three girls, right?
I do.
Yeah. Have your girls, as they've moved into adulthood, you know, have they, you know how that happens when you get older, because I'm a parent of older kids, your kids start to give parents feedback. You know, how have they verbalized, you know, how helpful that's been to them?
Yeah. Well, they've been, it's a good question. Well, one of the things that my kids have been questioned by other people in a positive, in a good way.
It's not easy being your kid either, I'm sure.
Well, that's exactly what
life
I mean
in
by
the
that.
Fishbowl. Yeah, because we get that.
Yeah, exactly. And so they've been asked those questions. So because of that, I've had the privilege of kind of hearing their answers, maybe not directly, but indirectly by the person who said, yeah, man, I asked your kid about this or that. And the feedback of maybe things like, you know, like you said, the intentionality. My parents very clearly, you know, made time. Scheduled time. They made sure there was margin, that they were available when something went haywire in the weekly schedule, there was margin. I think they could articulate things like that. Maybe an ability to really be this, you know, we really chose to value not so much doubting, but open, authentic conversations about the questions that we have from the time they were three, if you will, to as they grow up. Do we model that in our conversation, or is that just a ministry principle I use when I go down to church? You know, it's like, no, we try. And I think our kids have articulated back that maybe they might say the ease of conversation. Now, I got to tell you, we've went through some really hard times with our kids.
Yeah.
I mean, we went through moments both in high school, well, back into middle school for sure, but definitely through high school and even in the early years of college, where we went through some times where, man, I tell you what, I mean, there were, you know, I won't go into all the details, but I was shaking my fists at God mm-hmm. on a couple occasions, like, saying, man, I've poured all this time and energy into the lives of all these college students, and yet this is what I get, you know, with one of my own or whatever. I mean, those things that you know, and you feel like a hypocrite going to work because you know, you feel like you couldn't even do these things with your own kids. So we went through hard stuff. So my comments even about this transitional dynamic is coming through me going, well, I made some mistakes, and I think I did some things well. And if I boil it all down, it won't take up it won't be a 250-page book, that's for sure. It's a couple simple things like, were you there in the midst of the chaos for your children? Did you show up into those dark moments? And Mike, in your case, and shut up. Because mm-hmm. yeah. as a dad, I needed to, there were times I just needed to say
yeah.
nothing. Don't yeah. fix it. Don't give an answer. But show up into the darkness and the chaos of those times and be with your kids in the midst of their tears and not try to solve and fix the problem right now. There'll be a time.
Yeah. Wow. That is excellent for every parent to hear, and even more so as somebody who's worked in youth ministry and had a vocation where my kids have lived life in the fishbowl. And by the way, I'm a pastor's kid, so I get that too. That's great. Those words are really good for the youth workers who are listening, and I hope they'll ponder that, especially those who have little kids. You know, you've really got to be mindful of that. That's good. That's good.
It's a good reminder for myself, too, just like you said, with little kids as a parent. Well, Mike, this has been such a privilege. Really grateful for your time. One of the things we like to do before we close is to ask our guests if there are any resources that you would love to be able to pass along to our listeners based upon some of the conversation that we had. Is there anything that has been an influence in your life with regards to college ministry or preparing parents for students going to college or any of the number of things that we discussed here on today's podcast that you would recommend our listeners checking out?
You know, it's interesting because, you know, we talked about maybe some of these things before, but I've always been a little slow to recommend. Well, let me back up. I'm sorry. I'm rambling on this answer a little bit. People will say, Mike, best book on college ministry. I get that question all the time. Bessie, if I got to read something on college ministry, what should I read? And I used to always scramble and run, you know, because I've read this, I've read that, I've read these things, and I agree with some of that, and I don't agree with some of these other things. And finally, I decided I've got one answer now for that. And my answer is this: study the way Jesus interacts with his disciples.
Yeah.
Just study it. Don't study it to hear the commands or the, you know, whatever, what I'm supposed to go do. Just look at the way Jesus and the disciples interact, and you'll get a good insight to what college ministry is like. Because you've got Peter climbing out of a boat, being the man of faith one minute and sticking his foot in his mouth the next. That's working with young people, right? They are going to stand up and do great things one minute and then a get behind me Satan moment right after that. And that is so for me, there's a lot of books you can read, but I would say make sure you really understand the way in which Jesus and his interaction happened with the disciples in those years. I think that's really, really good. You know, the other thing too is I'm really glad I can say I've been doing college ministry for 30 years, but even more so, I can say that I've been doing it with some of the same people. for almost 30 years. And so the sharpening that really occurs for me is occurring around the people that I'm still in ministry with. Mm-hmm. And so my hope would be for all the folks out there, especially the young youth ministry guys, that they would find a band of brothers and sisters to go run with and to do this with for decades. Because I may not have the same kind of impact with students I did when I was 28, but I think I'm better at it than I was at 28. Like, I don't have the same kind of impact. Some of the stuff that I got at 28, I wish I would hear in positive feedback. I don't get that stuff anymore, but I think I have a better sense, and I think I can train people better and talk about it better, running with people. And you know, one of the other things, Sherry and I were talking about this. My wife and I were talking about this, and I said, Sherry, you know, if we were to kind of sum up, like, why do you think 30 years has this kind of been going on and working and I'm still alive? And she and I looked at each other and she goes, you've avoided the trends. Ooh, and I said, well, that, I wow. said, I kind of, and
I like that.
I looked at my shirt, my shoes, my pants. I was like, I thought she was making fun of me, but, you know, having been in Seattle, and I probably don't need to mention all the different, churches that have come and in some cases gone around the Seattle area, but there's a lot of people who run after the trends, and I don't mean to imply that the books or the resources tend to be the trendy thing, but a lot of times I found myself reading the latest and greatest and getting distracted about something I should be doing now because this is the way students today are versus the way they were back in the day. And I've realized today the stuff that worked in 1987 is exactly the same thing that's working in 2017.
Wow.
And it's the church of God making themselves available to get into the messiness of the youth culture and spend the time with them talking about a God that loves them unconditionally.
Wow.
That is awesome.
We got to take the time to
think,
do it.
I just think you made a best friend in Walt. Right now.
Yeah.
I mean, you are singing really the praises and their desire that we have, even with this podcast and what CPYU has stood for so many years in our own ministry, Project 619. So, man, honestly, I'm so glad that we've gotten this opportunity to have you on the podcast. I know that some point in the future, I want to have you and Sherry on because I know that you also do quite a bit of work with relationship counseling sex and sexuality. So it'd be a lot of fun to get the two of you
That'd
on.
Be fun
so.
Too. Yeah.
Hey, Jason, before awesome. You close it out, just yeah. one quick question. Mike, what's the Young Life College? Do you guys have a website, a place where we can go to learn more?
Yeah, if you just go to the younglife.org site, you can just click on the college
like
page
a tab
and
there,
you'll be
yeah.
there.
Okay, yeah. great. Good. We'll do yeah, that. Cool. We'll include a link to that. Thank you for you for being on here.
You bet. Yeah. Thank you, guys.
Well, a lot of fun. Well, with that, we'll close this podcast here with Mike Gaffney and Walt Mueller. We thank you for listening to Youth Culture Matters. Until next time, happy podcast.
Thanks for joining us for Youth Culture Matters, a podcast from the Center for Parent Youth Understanding. If you'd like to learn more about today's youth culture, visit our website at cpyu.org. And if you have any questions, comments, or feedback, email us at podcast@cpyu.org.